Chapter 24. In 1965, the chief medical examiner for New York City and the surrounding boroughs was 63-year-old Cornell-educated Dr. Milton Helpern, who became known as a Sherlock Holmes with a microscope. During his 20-year tenure, Dr. Helpern performed over 20,000 autopsies and served as a key witness in several infamous murder trials. Widely admired as a forensic pathologist and medical detective, he co-wrote the definitive work on forensic medicine, legal medicine, pathology, and toxicology. Helpern also wrote Autopsy, the Memoirs of Milton Helpern, the World's Greatest Medical Detective, a title symbolic of an ego the size of Mars. In all, he worked for the medical examiner's office for 42 years. But based on how his office handled Dorothy Kilgallen's autopsy, his reputation appears more questionable. The autopsy report and those pages included in the official report as addendums under the title Report of Death were first published in The Reporter Who Knew Too Much. One must wonder why no other researcher spent the time to discover the report, hiding in plain sight for more than 50 years. The documents, obtained by this author from the National Archives, are a combination of typed and handwritten notes. These memoranda provide a window into the facts gathered and conclusions reached by Dr. James Luke concerning the official cause of the famous reporter's death. One important point should be recalled. When Dr. Luke arrived at Kilgallen's townhouse, it must have been a sad scene. Who was there at the time is in dispute. Besides the police detectives, those claiming to be present were husband Richard, Kerry, his tutor Ibna Hassan, James Clement, apparently Kilgallen's friend actress Joan Crawford, Brenda Desjardins said she was not there, and arguably Jill Colmer and her husband. It doesn't take much imagination to consider the tears being shed all around, the agony being experienced in a mansion that now had the feel of death within it. If the family gathered in the drawing room, for instance, where no electricity was present, only candlelight, those who loved Kilgallen must have shared hugs and remorse, despite friction between certain family members. As will be learned, Richard was in no shape to be any sort of comforter. In fact, he acted in a manner that would have greatly disturbed his wife of 25 years. The Report of Death pages, presumably written following Dr. Luke's presence at Kilgallen's death scene, provide a starting point for learning the evidence he had assembled. Toward the upper right corner of this page, the case number 9333 first appears. As noted in The Reporter Who Knew Too Much, it is important to consider the times listed to the left of Dr. Luke's signature and to the right of the handwritten 11-8-65 above the typed date and time. This apparently meant the time of death was 1:40 p.m. The examiner, medical examiner, had been notified at 2:45 p.m., and the examiner had arrived on the scene at 3:10 p.m., staying until departing at 4:15 p.m., an hour and 5 minutes later. Beside pronounced dead by was the name Dr. Heller, 11 East 68th Street. No explanation apparently exists as to why Heller, a physician who practiced neurology and psychiatry on Park Avenue during his 50-plus year career, was the one who pronounced Kilgallen dead. Notice that the place of death is noted as 45 East 68th Street, 3rd floor, which coincides with the notation of her last residence at the same address. Name of deceased is listed as Dorothy Colmer, Kilgallen, misspelled. Her occupation is noted as writer, with identification by Mr. Colmer, same address. Why whoever was consulted dubbed Kilgallen a writer instead of perhaps a journalist, a reporter, or even a television star is unknown. Pinpointing 1:40 p.m. as the time of death is confusing but may have been intended to disclose when Dr. Heller pronounced Kilgallen dead. How Dr. Luke knew this, since he apparently did not arrive until 3:10 p.m., is unknown. To the right and below the date and times on the report are names Detective Green and Detective Doyle, 19 Squad, the two NYPD detectives who apparently visited Kilgallen's townhouse. Use of 19 is an apparent reference to Manhattan's 19th precinct. This means that police were called from Manhattan while Dr. Luke was notified, for whatever reason, at the Brooklyn branch of the ME's office. No reason for this Manhattan to Brooklyn switch has been established. Under witness or informants, the following information exists. According to husband, deceased had been well recently, had not seen physicians since FR, fractured shoulder, last year. Something indistinguishable, returned from what's my line just past 11:30 p.m., feeling chipper. Went in to write column. Husband said goodnight and went to bed. According to maid, she went in to awaken deceased at 12 noon and found her unresponsive. Neither maid or butler worked yesterday. No past history, alcoholism, or other medicinal habits. Apparently, Detective Mike Ward, Doyle's boss, gathered this information from Richard. Later, evidence would surface that Detective Doyle knew differently, since Richard told him that he did not see his wife when she arrived at home that night. This report page, one whose entries are all handwritten, permits knowledge that Kilgallen's health was not an issue, that she was chipper when she retired for the evening, that the maid discovered her dead at noon, and, of great interest, that, according to Richard, she had no past history, alcoholism, or other medicinal habits. As will be explained, each of these proclamations is subject to further explanation, each adding to the intrigue surrounding events on the day Kilgallen died. On the following page of the report, there once again appears the circled 9333 case number. Beneath the heading, State the Circumstances and Particulars of Death, the following pertinent text appears in Dr. Luke's handwriting. Scene: orderly, elegant apartment, papers in order. Deceased, a middle-aged W.F. lying on back in bed, head on pillow. Robert Ruark's new book by her side, clad in blue bathrobe and nothing else. Covers up to chin. Hair dyed brown, long eyelashes. Chest, indistinguishable, obese. Rigidity complete. No trauma, no signs violence. Phone call, Dr. David S. Baldwin, 9RE78989. Habituated to Seconal, took 3 to 4 per day. TR86072. Hunter Pharmacy. He fill prescription for Seconal 100 milligrams, 50 caps, 10-8-65. Of immediate interest are the words, papers in order, with no explanation what those papers included. As will be explained, questions arise as to what happened to certain of Kilgallen's papers, including those included in her JFK assassination investigation file on the day of her death. Next, notice the location of Kilgallen's body, lying on back in bed, head on pillow, the presence of Robert Ruark's book, and what she was wearing, blue bathrobe, apparently nothing underneath. Also of interest, covers up to chin, and the presence of long eyelashes. Confusion should have reigned since, apparently, Kilgallen had already read Ruark's book, The Honey Badger. Proof comes from a July 4, 1965 Voice of Broadway column where she divulged that the protagonist of The Honey Badger dies in the end. Why, one must ask, was a book she had already read, positioned upside down, as Mark Sinclair recalled. Kilgallen's being labeled as obese appears in complete conflict with her general appearance, as proven by the look of her appearance hours earlier on What's My Line. Dr. Luke's conclusion that there was no trauma and no signs of violence appears to exclude physical abuse as the cause of death. The indication that she may have been habituated to Seconal apparently meant Kilgallen was known to be a habitual user of sleeping pills. Mention of the Hunter Pharmacy and Dr. Baldwin, Kilgallen's personal physician, with the notation He filled prescription for Secanol 100 milligrams, 50 caps, 10-8-65, indicates either Dr. Luke or one of the detectives called or visited the nearby pharmacy to check on her use of Secanol. If took 3 to 4 per day was correct, the supply of the barbiturate would have run out well before the day of Kilgallen's death, since even 3 a day would have lasted only until approximately October 24th. One may conclude Dr. Luke, based on the evidence present at the death scene, immediately jumped to the conclusion that Kilgallen had died accidentally due to a drug overdose. All of his handwritten notations point in this direction prior to the official autopsy being performed. The culprit, he assumed, had been Secanol, and since Kilgallen had a prescription for that drug and was a habitual user, Dr. Luke apparently felt accidental death was a safe bet. Notice Hazel Vereen is listed as transcribing typist. This means Dr. Luke dictated this information into a recorder, presumably as the autopsy proceeded. The text then reads, "Autopsy performed by Dr. James Luke, Junior Medical Examiner, in the presence of Dr. Sterner and Baden, November 8, 1965. Kilgallen, erroneously aged at 48, is once again described as obese, while no figure is listed under approximate weight. Her eyelashes are described as being false. She is described as having extensive makeup involving the face, neck, and upper chest. A second indication appears that there was no external evidence of trauma." The page attached to the one marked autopsy contains details regarding Kilgallen's bodily functions, but nothing of major significance regarding cause of death. Typed above the word toxicology is 50 cc of pink fluid in stomach. Then the typed words cause of death pending further study follow. There is no date beside the notation, but the first page of the autopsy report confirms Dr. Luke's dictation happened on the same day the autopsy was performed, November 8th, the day Kilgallen died. Below the typed words, "identification waived per Dr. James Luke," appears in Dr. Luke's handwriting, "final cause of death, acute ethanol and barbiturate intoxication, circumstances undetermined. 12-1-65, James R. Luke, M.D. Dr. Luke's report of death notations show he had adopted an accidental death theory based on information collected at Kilgallen's death scene. But why he had concluded the autopsy report with the words, "cause of death pending further study," is unknown. Did further study mean awaiting the toxicology results from the ME lab? Or, in the alternative, had something else changed his mind so that he could not definitively conclude that Kilgallen had died accidentally from the alcohol and drug overdose, presumably from ingesting too many Secanol pills? The final cause of death on this page beneath the typed information includes the handwritten date, 12-1-65. This suggests nearly 3 weeks passed between when Dr. Luke dictated the words "pending further study" on November 8th and when he wrote in longhand, "final cause of death, acute ethanol and barbiturate intoxication, circumstances undetermined," on the 1st of December. This triggers the question of what specifically he learned on or before December 1st that caused him to determine the final cause of death by including the words "circumstances undetermined." A subsequent handwritten page attached to the page marked autopsy provides clarification. Kilgallen's case number, 9333, is included, proving this page was part of the official documents. Beneath the words "Dorothy Colmer," Dr. Luke organized the toxicology test results according to microscopic and chemical. Under microscopic, no pathology is written next to heart, stomach, adrenals, cerebellum, cerebrum, brainstem, kidneys, and other body parts. Below these notations, under chemical, is listed alcohol blood, 0.15, indistinguishable. Eye fluid, 0.15, indistinguishable. Brain, 0.1, indistinguishable. Stomach, TR. Besides these words are barbiturates, indistinguishable. Liver, brain. UV, 2.4, indistinguishable. Lowercase e, capital O, liver. 1.6, indistinguishable. Lowercase e, capital O, brain. Indistinguishable. Indistinguishable. Same level as secanol, tuinol. These were the following words in Dr. Luke's handwriting. Final cause of death, acute ethanol and barbiturate intoxication. Circumstances undetermined. 11/15/65. Dr. James R. Luke, M.D. Stamp. Office of Chief Medical Examiner. 520 First Avenue, New York, New York, 10016. Blood alcohol content is the measuring stick for whether someone is legally intoxicated, that is, drunk. Kilgallons is listed as 0.15. That this determination was apparently made at 3:10 p.m., or a bit later when Dr. Luke presumably arrived at her townhouse, means her actual blood alcohol content could have been much higher, depending on the actual time of death, especially if it was several hours earlier. However, blood alcohol tests after a person dies may not be reliable, and because of the time lapse with no reason specified as to the delay, there is no accurate way to know how much alcohol Kilgallen consumed prior to or after she returned to her townhouse. Determining how the blood alcohol level affected Kilgallen's cause of death is important, but also dependent on the type and quantity of drugs in her body at the time she died. Information as to these factors is located to the far right of the word chemical. Next to barbiturates is an indistinguishable word, and below that, liver, brain. Below and to the right of these words are UV, and then two numbers, 2.4 for liver and 1.6 for brain. Underneath this information are two indistinguishable words. One may be layers, and the other spot. Below appears the words at same levels as, and then, significantly, the words secanol and tuinol, handwritten by Dr. Luke. Little doubt exists that the notation of the word tuinol may in fact be the smoking gun with regard to confusion surrounding the true cause of Kilgallen's death. Dr. Luke had indicated she had a prescription for secanol from her personal physician, Dr. Baldwin, but no such prescription is noted for tuinol, a toxic combination of two active ingredients, amobarbital sodium, a sedative hypnotic, and secobarbital sodium, secanol, sleeping pills. Indication of tuinol in Kilgallen's bloodstream is alarming. This drug can be very dangerous when abused. The window between a dose causing drowsiness and one causing death can be very small. Also, its effect is accelerated when alcohol is added to the equation. Physicians prescribing tuinol strictly forbid its use with any alcoholic beverage. The mention of tuinol is of critical importance when clarifying Kilgallen's exact cause of death. Why? Because, just as Dr. Luke knew, tuinol being present was a clue that something was wrong, that something unexplainable had emerged, presumably causing doubt in his mind as to the actual cause of death and the circumstances surrounding it. The presence of tuinol must have puzzled Dr. Luke. What to do? While the presence of secanol, the sleeping pills Kilgallen used habitually, in her system pointed directly at accidental death, the presence of tuinol, a much more dangerous drug and one she had no prescription for, confused the issue as to how she died. One may only imagine the medical examiner sitting in his office, perhaps breathing heavily, his mind swirling as to how he could substantiate an accidental cause of death when a deadly barbiturate complicated that conclusion. By then, Dr. Luke would have known of Kilgallen's celebrity status and that the media would be most interested in his findings. Certainly, he did not want to look foolish, did not want to tarnish his reputation, and did not want to be reprimanded by superiors who might discover any cover-up. The answer appears to be that Dr. Luke hedged on the final cause of death, including the words circumstances undetermined, since he could not figure out how Tuinol had been discovered in her system unless, and this is huge, there was more to her death than it being accidental. Otherwise, Dr. Luke had an open-and-shut case of accidental death, but to cover his tracks if further tests were conducted at some point, he added the puzzling words to his report. On this page, Dr. Luke wrote 11-15-65, an indication that he decided on that date to fix the final cause of death as acute ethanol and barbiturate intoxication, while including the words circumstances undetermined. Since the same words appear on the official autopsy page with the date 12-1-65, he must have written the same words in his own hand 2 weeks later. In such clouded circumstances, the documents Dr. Luke released to those who had the authority to view them become of great interest. In New York City in the 1960s, the requirements for receiving a copy of the autopsy report, aside from police officials or the district attorney's office, if requested, involved an official request from any next of kin, including spouse, siblings, parents, grandparents, and uncles and aunts. There is no means of confirming whether any of these family members attempted to secure a copy, although, as will be seen, at some point, Kilgallen's daughter Jill may have requested and read the report. Concerning release of the report to the media, or its leaking to the press, some news outlets, as will be revealed, appeared to quote from it. If anyone, whether family members or the media, was able to read the report, one must wonder if they noticed the presence of Tuinol in Kilgallen's system, and, if so, why presence of this drug did not cause confusion about the cause of death and initiate inquiries. To date, this author, despite extensive research of several NYC newspapers published during the time of Kilgallen's demise, has seen no disclosure of Tuinol being discovered in her system. There is also no reprint in the media of the autopsy report or its accompanying pages in part or in its entirety. An additional possibility exists for Dr. Luke's actions or inactions. Concerned with questions he did not want to answer about his findings, he may have not included the toxicology results indicating the presence of Tuinol when releasing the final autopsy report. His motive for doing so will become clear based on startling facts about the ME's office uncovered by this author. Nevertheless, the undisputed presence of Tuinol in Kilgallen's bloodstream during her autopsy call into question every theory proposed for 6 decades and counting concerning the circumstances surrounding her death. Closer inspection of the drug provides further clarification, but first it is important to understand the utter confusion regarding the cause of Kilgallen's death from the very first media reports published on the day of and those following November 8, 1965. Ironically, as if to signal a distress from the heavens concerning the passing of one of the most remarkable women in history, what became known as the Northeast Blackout of 1965 happened the next day, the 9th. Along with New York City, the supply of electricity was disrupted to millions of people in portions of Massachusetts, Rhode Island, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and even Canada. Like the electricity, Kilgallen had been turned off, her voice silenced once and for all.